This is CollarWorks Radio, and I'm your host, Justin Baker. This week, we recorded in the middle of the Opalka Gallery, surrounded by Joanne Carson's beautiful and stimulating 25-year retrospective, Rise Up and Shine. My guest, if you haven't figured it out, is Joanne Carson. So listen up. First off, thank you for coming here and speaking with me. Let me be honest, I was a little nervous. Because you're a former professor, and I was like slightly...
And I'm very, very intimidating in general, so of course you would be a little worried about that.
Well, you know, honestly, when I started at the program, when we're talking about SUNY Albany, it was intimidating to have you guys come in my studio.
I think about it now.
That was where I was coming from.
It's easy when you're a professor to think that the students should or shouldn't be a certain way. But really, as an artist, to have people come into your own studio in that, it's very nervous making, in fact. So I can appreciate, I could put myself in that position still.
Well,
and I just wanted to say thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah.
Because it's been very thrilling to be showing in this more regional context, which in 35 years of being at the university teaching, I've only shown at the museum there. So this is like, I feel kind of an eye-opening experience for me, and it's nice to be included in something being produced through CollarWorks.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's great. Thank you. Also, just to thank you to Opalka Gallery for giving us this after-hours time. So we're sitting in the gallery looking at your work, and for anybody who hasn't come or plans to come or what to expect, it's full of vibrant paintings and sculptures that really emulate organic forms, nature, your garden. That's one thing I think we could talk about. But the other thing was maybe some thoughts on, like, having, it's kind of being billed or, you know, presented as a 25-year survey of your work. And that, you know, for me as an artist, that's a long time. I'm not there yet. But I'm curious, like, how have you changed? I mean, that's a big question, but maybe even, like, how does it feel sitting back and seeing it all together?
Yes. Well, this is a perfect time to think about that because I prepared my lecture for tomorrow night. And so I look to see, I have 114 images that I'm going to show, something like that. Half of which, the work was done before this show. So I worked for 16 years before this 27 years, and I like to see this as my middle period because I plan on working for another 20 years after this. So, but there is, it kind of divided very naturally from early work to the first piece in this show, which was, it was kind of took 2 years. It's written down sometimes as 1993, sometimes 95, because it took 2 years and it had different iterations, this piece, Tree of Desire.
Oh, okay.
And it was a piece that was the first real clearly figurative work that I did, and there's a kind of inherent struggle, I would say, where the part that's about nature came about in a much more abundant way than anything that happened before. So this figure is a kind of Daphne figure. She's locked into this tree. She's part of the tree. She's a drum majorette. She's rebelling against being the tree. So it's a very weirdly conflicted dynamic relationship that she has to being cast as being part of nature. It's not the story of Daphne where she was grateful to be escaping from Apollo and she prayed to her river god father and she was glad to be a tree. This tree, no. She wants to and she doesn't want to. So that was my in to thinking about nature was through a myth. And that kind of continued in the next piece was 1999, which is Wood Nymph.
The Wood Nymph.
Yeah. And it's a trompe l'oeil gigantic 9-foot tree in which this ballerina collie figure who's balancing pies on her five or six arms again, is making a little bit of a, not a mockery, but embracing the myth, but with irony, mm-hmm. I would say.
Now, was there any hesitation, or because you talk about like getting into this topic or this world of nature, because before it was kind of like you were making very abstract things, right? Am I right about that? Or,
you know, when I look back on it, I wouldn't say that they were abstract, but they were pastiches of other artists' work.
Okay.
You know, so early on, when I look back at work I was doing when I was in my 20s, I had a whole spiel about postmodernism. This is before people even used that term.
Mm-hmm.
But there were ways in which you would use art from the past as kind of a narrative story.
Right.
So I was using people whom I loved, like Braque and Picasso, Juan Gris, modernists, right? I would take parts of their painting, Cezanne, repaint parts of their painting, but paint them on three-dimensional apparatuses that were made out of televisions and chairs and tables and plastic fruit. It's not unlike how I was just talking about this piece.
Mm-hmm.
Like, most of my work is in rebellion. Like, I'll make it, but it's rebelling against something else. There's a kind of uneasiness in the conflict between nature and artifice,
okay. Just
in a broad way.
Yeah.
So my early work, what really differentiates this body of work from that is I'm now using my own language. It took me 16 years to figure out how not to refer. I learned from the people that I was using.
Yeah.
I literally copied them. I learned about color from Cezanne and Braque. And,
mm-hmm.
But I wanted to invent something that belonged to myself. That's not that easy to do.
Right.
So it took a long time, and I feel like I'm sort of solidly in this zone where the sculpture and the painting and the language of the garden are all overlapping.
Mm-hmm.
And so that took 27 years.
The short, yeah. No shortcut. Yeah. But that's interesting. I didn't think about it like that, in developing your own language in this vocabulary. Because you look around and it seems so natural. It seems
yes.
Like this was always there.
I know it.
In some way.
Right.
So I'm curious in some way about the idea of the garden. Now, when you make these, do they don't necessarily, you're a gardener, right?
Or well, I just became a gardener after I started making this work.
Okay, after.
I wasn't drawn to it. Uh-huh. I didn't think that I would like living in the country.
Yeah.
I didn't want to move to the country. I live in Brooklyn, so Jim Butler, my husband, my wonderful husband, who is an artist, and he teaches at Middlebury College, we were living sort of like graduate students. We lived in this apartment, mm-hmm. and we decided we needed something a little bit more permanent. We thought about moving to Albany, and then we decided, no, we couldn't really manage that. And so we found this house in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have any plans
mm-hmm.
to become a gardener. I didn't want to be a gardener. I didn't even want to live in the country in particular.
Yeah.
However, I was taken over by the beauty of being there. And also, there's something about plants that I do feel like plants mm-hmm. do control people. I felt very controlled.
Well, that's interesting.
Oh, yeah. Because I thought, you know, I'm going to garden. The first thing is, we found this house that has this beautiful view out the front.
Mm-hmm.
In the back, there's no view. There's a steep hill. And through the kitchen window, there's a rectangle of brown weeds. That's what spoke to me,
uh-huh.
that window.
Okay.
So when I started gardening, I only started gardening. I'd plant something and I'd run back in the kitchen and I would see the topiary. There's topiaries. And I was sort of making a three-dimensional painting.
Yeah.
And that's all I did for 2 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So when people would come over, Vermonters are going, like, mm-hmm. you got 12 acres. How come you're only planting right there? Because it's through the window.
Right, this fragrance.
Yeah.
As always, thanks for listening. Check out Joanne's show at the Opalka Gallery. It's up until February 29th. And check out Northern Lights at ColorWorks Gallery. It's up until March 14th.